welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's a Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Every Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we run a radio show for harshmantravel.com. harshmantravel.com. That's the place you want to go to check out anything related to travel. So whether you're going to do cruising or anything else, like big stuff, small stuff, make sure you check out Harshman Travel. Now, the way this whole thing got started is when we started building Building Fortunes Radio, I know I couldn't do all the radio shows myself. I was looking for some great guest hosts. I called out for Pam Harshman, who was a customer of ours on the home-based business side. And I told her what we were working on, and she said, well, that sounds really good, Peter, in the great way that Pam can let you down. Like, she'll say, well, that sounds really great, Peter, but Ron and I are going to be not doing the home-based business thing anymore. We're going to become traditional travel agents. And I said, oh, shoot. And then I had to think for a little bit, and I said, wait a minute. The reason why I wanted you to do radio shows with us is because I know you're a hard worker. I know you do things the right way. You always study up. You got your notes in line. You make sure you're able to train your people. They're in good hands when they're working with you, all of that good stuff. And if you become a travel agent with Ron, I know you're going to do the same thing. You know, my playful saying is you always take your head with you wherever you go. So I know you're going to bring your that same attitude, mindset, work ethics with you in the travel business. And people that do home-based businesses, we travel all the time. It's part of our wish list, our goals, our bucket list. So let's do some radio shows. And this is one of our longest-running radio shows. Again, if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com and you look for Harshman Travel, you'll be able to hear all the previous radio shows. But you can go straight to harshmantravel.com for the great stuff that you need for all of your travel plans. Well, we've been doing this radio show. I wanted you to have the same level of enthusiasm that I have towards Pam and Ron. So the first half, we let them cover their backgrounds. And Pam's going to go first. We always do ladies first. Ron covers his second. Then we run a commercial break, and then we actually go and let Ron tell us all the really good news that's happening in the travel industry. And over the years we've been doing it, we were ramping this up so there's a lot of really good news. And then COVID happened, and then that was a different story. And then we got a little bit political sometimes. We kind of talked about just a little bit, and we talked about some things. And then that was kind of tough because it looked like the world was against, you know, people traveling all over the place. And then towards the tail end of 2022, we kind of announced that it was going to be kind of like a shakier but a better year, and 2023 was going to start to pick it up. And by 2024, it was going to come back with, you know, revenge, if you will, in a positive way, that it was going to grow like crazy, and that's basically what's been happening. But let's start off, like I had mentioned, with Ladies First. Pam, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us again. And I have to chuckle when you mentioned the little bit political.
Yeah, a little bit, yep. Just slightly.
Trying to ramp you guys in every moment.
That's it.
Yeah. Anyway, a little bit about my background is I started my working years as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest, and slow but sure worked myself up into court administration. Did that for several years, absolutely loved my job, but I met my husband and I ended up moving cross country down to sunny Florida. And once down here, I didn't want to start anywhere on the ladder, let alone the bottom. So I was looking for something to do that I could do primarily independently and hopefully work from home. Ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license, and I sold real estate in South Florida for several years. But that just wasn't my niche. So I went and got my life and health insurance license and sold Medicare supplements to the senior population. I absolutely loved it, loved my job. Every day was an adventure. It was fun because I had a lot of seniors, and some of these, especially the older ladies, it was like I would walk in almost like having a girls' tea party with some of her friends, and they had tables set and everything else, and so I would talk to everybody all at once. So it was really fun because it was always an unknown what the next call was going to be. And at the same time, it was very rewarding because as we get older, to me, the most important decision that we're going to make once we turn 65 is what we're going to do about our health care, because that's what takes us into, you know, right up to the time we pass. And so I wanted to make sure answers were given to all their questions and, you know, let them know what was out there. And it was just, it was rewarding all the way around knowing that I could help. At the same time, I was getting these carrots dangling in front of me on my Facebook newsfeed about home-based businesses and MLMs. And as you had mentioned, I was a customer of yours because I did try some of those. I had some winners and some couple losers. But being a customer of yours, we just kind of hit it off, and we have been just real good friends ever since. So lots of positive things came out of it, as well as my learning an awful lot while doing the home-based businesses and MLMs. It allowed me to learn all kinds of different things to work on our website. And so I do all the website work. Generally, Ron does all the talking stuff. And so it's a good match. But one day when I was out on one of my calls for my insurance, I got a phone call from one of my girlfriends. And out of the blue, she just asked me if Ron and I had ever thought about becoming travel agents. And, you know, that was just kind of blew me away because it hadn't been even a week that Ron and I had sat down and talked about travel. Did we want to go travel? We were baby boomer empty nesters. We had some disposable income. We also, you know, had schedules that we could make our own, so we had time that we could go. So we were kind of comparing bucket lists and then deciding which one we wanted to go to first and, you know, yada, 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 all that good stuff. And so when she mentioned that, I was like, whoa, I couldn't wait to get home. And then once I got home, we sat down, we talked about it, and we did all kinds of research on the Internet, jumped in head first, and from there, we did all the training we could get our hands on, got the proper licensures, and in the long run, I have to say we've done a whole lot more traveling so far than we would have been able to do, and we are far from being done, as well as helping an awful lot of people stretch their travel dollars. That was until that C word, COVID, hit. And like you had mentioned, that was kind of put a screeching halt to travel, but ultimately we're back, we're going strong, and we have trips planned for us and ready to, well, I can't say ready to book everybody else because we've been booking people a whole lot since everything opened up, and so we're just glad that the travel business is back.
Excellent. And then Ron, over to you.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be here with you again. My background is very different from Pam's. Spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, very heavily involved, obviously, in my own clinical work, my own clinical practice, but also chose to get deeply involved in the self-regulatory aspect of the profession. When I first started out going to school and moving in that direction, a very good friend of mine, a mentor, strongly suggested that I should get involved in the Provincial Psychological Association and get behind the scenes and into the working matters of the profession. She thought I had a lot to offer and that I would find it very rewarding. And she was right. I was very pleased to do that, very much eye-opening when you see the things that most people in most professions are totally unaware of. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking psychology, medicine, law, dentistry, you know, accounting, anything. The self-regulatory boards really deal with the activities of some professionals that most other professionals are totally unaware of, especially sitting on the ethics committee, professional affairs committees. And I got involved in both the provincial association and then moved on to also get involved in the national association, the Canadian Psychological Association, and was very pleased and honored to be elected as the chair of the applied division of that organization, and sat on the board of directors, many of the committees, and represented the Canadian Association with the sister association here in the U.S. At the end of my career, I was very, very honored to be elected as a lifetime honorary fellow of the Canadian Psych Association. So it was very, very rewarding, very eye-opening, as I said, and very enjoyable at the same time. I was fortunate in my undergraduate and graduate training to have a number of professors who really stressed the point that if we were even considering going into private practice at any point, it would be extremely important before doing that to gain as much varied clinical experience as we could, working with different clinical populations, because the point they made is that when you go into private practice, you really have very little control over who calls you up to make an appointment, why they're coming to see you, what situation they're dealing with, where they need professional help. And the point they made was that if you had no clue of the type of life situation, the type of stresses that they were facing, you could end up doing a lot more harm than good. And I really took that advice to heart. And when I first started working, even in my undergraduate years, I made a point of trying to end up getting a job in pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems, and was very pleased that I had done that. It was very important, and ended up working in pretty much every one of the different areas. Did a lot of time in alcohol and drug abuse, corrections, both institutional and community, voc rehab, mental retardation, inpatient psychiatric care, really did the gamut of working in different areas so that when I did go into private practice, I felt very prepared to deal with whatever came in the door, and it certainly worked out that way. Once I got into private practice, after a short period of time, I really started specializing, working with young couples, doing a lot of premarital counseling, a lot of marriage counseling, a lot of sexual counseling, and working with that population very quickly, found myself being in the court system in family law because a number of these young couples were going through divorce, fighting over kids, and I ended up being called in as an expert witness trying to help the judges make decisions about both custody and access. And it was very fortuitous because when I got into that arena, there was a major change that took place in the court system. Up until that time, there was pretty much a pre-drawn conclusion in the courts that if you had a young couple going through divorce and there were young kids involved and they were fighting over custody, the courts almost always would grant custody to mommy and visitation to daddy. And although that worked out favorably in a lot of situations, we started seeing more and more cases where not only was it not working out well, but it turned out to be a very negative, very destructive outcome. And as a result of that, I was in Canada at the time, where the Divorce Act is a piece of federal legislation, which means all divorces in Canada go through the Supreme Court in each province. Supreme Court justices across the country have very collegial relationships. They hold semi-annual conferences and usually come back from those conferences with major procedural or just operational decisions. And the year that I got heavily involved in the courts in these child custody disputes, the justices came back from their Banff conference, summer conference that year, having made the decision that in the future, all decisions regarding child custody and access had to be based on the psychological needs and the psychological outcomes for the children involved. And without going into all the details, that was a very proper decision, a very important decision, but it led to the development of two new subspecialties, one in the School of Clinical Social Work and one in the School of Clinical Psychology. And I was obviously very involved in that, working with other professionals. We got together and said we had to develop a standardized method to evaluate the psychological best interests of the kids involved, who had to be interviewed, what kinds of things had to be presented, and then not only doing the research to come up with those clinical decisions, but also the whole presentation in court. So I ended up doing a lot of guest lecturing at the Faculty of Law, talking to law students about the proper use of expert witnesses, how to prepare them, how to cross-examine, etc., and also doing a lot of professional training at both social work and psychology conventions, talking to other professionals who were interested in getting involved in that arena. So it was very heavy work, very demanding, but very, very rewarding, and I was certainly very, very pleased and excited to be at the forefront of some major, major changes taking place. In any event, after Pam and I got together, we'd been together for a relatively short period of time, when we decided to semi-retire. We moved from southeast Florida over to southwest Florida, decided to start raising alpacas. As Pam indicated, she got involved in the home-based business multi-level marketing arena, and although I wasn't involved with that, I was certainly very supportive of her doing it. But when she came home and said she really wanted us to talk seriously about the possibility of not only traveling, but becoming professional travel consultants, it was something that just hit both of us as right on the nail, and we did the research. We decided if we were going to do it, we would do it the right way. We would not only get the proper training and licensure, et cetera, but we would also spend the time and the energy finding those travel vendors that we felt we could align with and support and promote. And we ended up doing that, went to the annual convention for the Cruise Line International Association, met a lot of the higher-ups in the different cruise lines, and really I think we ended up doing a lot more travel than we ever would have been able to had we not become professional consultants. But we've also helped a lot of people make the most out of not only their travel dollars, but their travel time as well. So COVID hit, and it really screwed up everything. But during the time that we were kind of watching the destruction, we tried to properly and objectively evaluate what we thought was going to be the final outcome. And I'm pleased to say that our optimism at the time was well rewarded and well based, because since COVID has been and gone, we are really seeing a major, we're seeing a major return to the forefront of particularly the cruise industry, but the travel industry in general. And this week is no different from the previous few. I have some different kinds of announcements that really show what's happening in the industry and how the industry is coming back bigger and stronger than ever before.
Excellent. So we're going to take a little commercial break. We'll be right back with Ron Harshman giving us some of the updates. Go to harshmantravel.com. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back. And I know this is a travel weekend for a lot of people, and they're gearing up for some other things. Sometimes it's a local travel, but if you want to do some holiday travel and some other stuff, make sure you listen to Ron as far as some of the new things he's got going on. So, Ron, over to you.
Alrighty, thanks, Peter. A number of interesting announcements this week. Particularly, a couple of cruise lines are making some real headlines. But on a semi-sad note, the Port of Miami was closed last Sunday because there was a overnight accident with a death, and what happened was apparently a 30-foot boat and a Fisher Island ferry collided at about 3:30 in the morning, and the port ended up being closed for the day, and that left three different cruise ships and an estimated 15,000 passengers in limbo. There was the Norwegian Escape, the Carnival Celebration, and the MSC Seascape were all scheduled for Sunday turnaround calls with guests disembarking and new guests set to board. And they were just stuck for the day until they got things sorted out. But the Escape was apparently finishing a week-long round-trip Miami cruise. That went to the Dominican Republic, St. Thomas, Tortola. The Carnival ship was on an 8-night Southern Caribbean cruise that went to Aruba and Curacao. And the MSC Seascape was on a week-long voyage into Ocean Cay, Ocho Rios, Grand Cayman, and Cozumel. So it just kind of hit me that you go on a week-long cruise and you are at the end of the cruise, you have your plans to get up early in the morning, get your bag, get out there, try to get off the ship as quickly as you can, and all of a sudden you find that you're there for the day because the port is closed. So it was just interesting. But apparently everything got straightened out. Unfortunate that there was the one person who ended up deceased, but I'm sure that they are doing a full investigation into what happened, and I have not seen any report yet come out from the investigation, but just the fact that it had that kind of impact really shows. I've often talked about the amount of impact that the cruise industry has on ports of call in a positive way, and here we have sort of something that has nothing to do with the cruise industry having a big effect on the cruise industry at the port of call. So just interesting. On Monday this week up in Glacier Bay, the again, this is another indication of where, as I said earlier, the cruise lines do get involved in local events and can be very, very helpful, whether it's hurricanes hitting ports of call or whatever. But up in Alaska, there was a ship that had an engine room fire, and the U.S. Coast Guard called on the Princess Cruise Line to go out and with a water shuttle transfer all 51 of the passengers and 16 crew members from that ship to the Princess Cruise Line, and they said that they were pleased to report there were no injuries, and the crew was feeding and taking great care of the passengers. And of course, there were compliments going back and forth between the rescued ship and the cruise line. So very, very interesting, just the things that you know, the cruise lines get involved in that you don't think about until you sit down and say, you know, tell me all these different interventions and things that happen. In any event, again, from Princess Cruise Lines, they were this week started their 2023 Australia World Cruise, and it is sailing round trip from Sydney. The vessel is doing a 107-night voyage that will feature visits to 6 continents, different destinations around the globe, and the full itinerary sails for 32,500 nautical miles, includes 44 ports of call in 26 different countries.
Wow.
So they leave Sydney, they head north, they go to Southeast Asia, Middle East, before entering the Red Sea, crossing the Suez Canal, then they go through the Mediterranean, crossing the Gibraltar Strait to Northern Europe, through to the British Isles, Iceland, Greenland, as well as Canada and New England, and on the way back to Australia, they cross the Caribbean and the Panama Canal, visiting additional destinations in South America's Pacific Coast, the South Pacific, and New Zealand. So if you are bored with these week-long cruises or these weekend things to the Bahamas, don't forget that the cruise lines do offer 107 nights, and that's not the longest. There's been longer ones than that. But this is a very interesting itinerary. And this ship has been sailing from Australia year-round since 2022. And they are set to offer a series of 2 to 14-night cruises to Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific. And then they will depart from the Australian port of Brisbane. So, again, I find it very interesting when I'm reading some of these reports that come out for cruises and what's going on in the cruise industry far, far away, you know, other side of the world. And it just shows how all expanding this industry is, and it really is nice to see. The West Coast this year is looking at a record year of traffic. They are eclipsing the record year that they had in 2022. 2022, they had just under 1.4 million guests, million passengers in the West Coast. This year, they are expecting to go more than that, and they have far exceeded the 2008 record that they set before of 1.2 million. So these, the West Coast, when they talk about West Coast, we're talking about ports like San Diego, Los Angeles, Long Beach, and San Francisco, and they are primarily going to Mexico, and both up and down the coast, and also west out to Hawaii. The top West Coast cruise line, not surprise, is Carnival. They have 3 ships that are dedicated to that region, and they carry well over 600,000 guests annually just from Long Beach. So again, the numbers are amazing when you stop and think about it, of the number of people who have been involved in cruising. And as I've mentioned before, with the future bookings that all of the cruise lines are talking about, they are really proud of the fact that a good percentage of these future bookings are not just return passengers. There are a lot of new first-time cruisers that are making appointments and making bookings, and every one of the cruise lines is talking about their experiences, and they're all very, very positive. Carnival Corp came up with a number of very interesting announcements this week that I want to share with people, because, again, during the, I think, intentional attempt to destroy the cruise industry, we saw the major cruise corporations, Carnival Corp, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, and MSC, really dig in their heels and put up the money, go into debt to make the commitment that they would survive regardless of what the government was throwing at them. And now it's really interesting to see the kinds of thinking and planning that these major corporations go through in terms of how to come back stronger, what they should do. When you look at Carnival Corp, they own probably, I think it's around 10 or 12 different cruise lines. And they announced this week that over 50% of its inventory for the next year is booked at any time. And right now, they've got one-third of its projected onboard revenue pre-booked prior to sailing. And they were making the announcement that their bundled packages and pre-cruise options are really setting them on fire. The comment that they came up with was outboard revenues were once again off the charts this quarter, as the strategy delivers an added benefit of elevating spending once on board, enabling us to capture more of our guests' vacation wallet. And it's just interesting and somewhat surprising, but certainly enjoyable to look and see the planning that goes on and how they maneuver to make sure that they can survive and come back much stronger than they've ever been before. Another announcement that came out from Carnival Corp is that they were moving a couple of ships that were previously with Costa, which is the Italian sub-company of Carnival Corp. They moved that over to Carnival Cruise Line, and they said that the move of those two ships is having a tremendous growth for them, growing 22% more than they expected before the return after COVID. So they, again, comment made was we remain committed to our strategy of owning a portfolio of world-class brands, many of which are truly dedicated to specific markets, and it's clear that the strength of this portfolio is now shifting into high gear. So with the new CEO of Carnival Corp, they are really making some major decisions that are having a tremendous impact on their finances and on their overall strength. They said with over 90% of this year on the books, 2023 is now essentially behind us. We're strategically building a strong base of revenue for 2024. And in fact, our booked position for 2024 also stands at record levels. And again, they said our customer deposits are at an all-time high of $7.2 billion, which is significantly higher than our prior peak of $6 billion. So when you hear the numbers that are involved, you know, you kind of, at least from my perspective, I look at it and I say, this really is a tremendously large industry. The number of people whose lives depend on the cruise industry is phenomenal, both in terms of employees, in terms of people who have nothing to do with the cruise line, but live and work and operate at the different ports of call that the cruise lines go to, and their livelihood is basically from the passengers that the cruise lines bring to them. So here again, he said that the company's second quarter earnings call, he said that they are in the best booked position in their history, and the capacity that we have is about 5.5% capacity growth in 2024 versus 2023, and two-thirds of that goes to Carnival Cruise Line, which obviously is their highest returning brand, and that's, you know, sort of their name company. Another thing that Carnival got involved in, and I know I'm running over, so I'll hurry up with this, Peter, but...
You're okay. You can take as much time as you need.
Okay. Well, there's one other thing that Carnival got involved with that shows their commitment to and involvement with the different ports of call. They, in partnership with the Ministry of Grand Bahama, hosted a Golden Jubilee breakfast to celebrate the 50th independence of the Bahamas. And they had approximately 100 community members attended the event, which took place aboard the Carnival Legend that was docked in Freeport. And they honored the present and former parliamentarians of the Grand Bahamas. And it was just nice to see the announcement from the Bahamas that this is a partnership that has been operating for the last 50-plus years. And they said, we could not think of a better way to celebrate than with the Ministry of Grand Bahamas. We worked together to bring Carnival's cruise port destination to life, which will bring millions of visitors to experience the beauty and culture of Grand Bahama. So again, just nice to see what's going on. They're talking about the investment in the port destination. And again, we're talking big figures. They say this represents an investment of over $200 million.
Wow.
In rebuilding and expanding the port in Grand Bahama. And again, as I said just a few minutes ago, the number of lives that are affected by the cruise industry is just overwhelming. And again, we're just very, very pleased to see the continued growth and expansion. And I'm sure that with the number of real special deals that are being offered right now by the cruise lines, these numbers that they are projecting will not only be met, I would predict that they will be surpassed. So we are excited about it. It's certainly a very different frame of mind. We do the radio shows these weeks compared to to when COVID was going on. It's nice to say that when I go through my materials to find what I'm going to talk about during the radio show, I have not seen anything about COVID for a little while. So it's nice to see that it's gone. And what I'm seeing in other things that have nothing to do with the radio show, revealing the expansion of the class action lawsuits, the expansion of information about the major drug companies and what they knew and what they did not report about the COVID vaccines and everything. We have not, I think, even scratched the surface of everything that's going to come out to really put lights on what that was all about. So it's over.
It is over. Yep, that's, you can underline and put an exclamation point next to that one. So for those people that want to know more information, they can go to harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com. And Ron, I know you said something about the deposits were something like $7 billion. That's kind of like a word that maybe needs some clarification, because people put a small amount, usually, well, I shouldn't say what people usually do. I'm sure some people pay the whole thing in full. Some people pay it off in big chunks. A lot of people pay it off in smaller monthly payments. It might take a year or two, I guess, maybe if they're doing it like that, if they're on a budget. So that $7 billion probably only represents really a fraction of the money that's actually eventually going to be collected.
Absolutely, Peter, because, as you say, most of the cruise lines will from time to time run specials where you only have to put down a 50% deposit. And the deposits generally, are not big for major, major cruises. You know, you may have a $500 or $600 deposit. Many times they're running $25 deposits, $50 deposits. And as you say, a lot of people put down their deposit, and depending on how far out their actual cruise is, they don't make any payments for several months, and then will make a few payments before the final payment is due. But people can do whatever is comfortable for them, and the once the deposit is down, you've locked in whatever deal it is, whatever special, whatever amenities are contained in that package, and your money is your money until the final payment due date, which is usually about 60, maybe 90 days before the cruise. And if you if something comes up where you're not able to follow through and go on the cruise, regardless of how much money you've put up, whether you put a $50 deposit, a $600 deposit, whether you paid it off in full, that money is 100% returnable to you without any fees, without any penalties at all, until the final payment due date. And it really is a no-brainer to, when people know that where they want to go and what they want to do and what time frame they're looking at, to go ahead and make their reservations, put down their deposit. And it's just a no-brainer, because your money is yours until you go. And if you can go and you lock it in, you scored a good deal. And if, as I say, if something comes up you're not able to go, you haven't lost a penny.
Excellent. Okay, good. So we're going to check everybody next week. First of all, everybody have a happy, safe July 4th. And we will be back next week in the second half of the year on Harshman Travel Radio. So we'll be back, guys. HarshmanTravel.com. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Pam.
Very safe, Joe. On the board. Everybody.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.